Good morning. Coming up on 7:41 here on the Mighty 690. It is time for our chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. We have livestock production agent Wendy Powell and diversified ag agent David Skronks. How are you doing?
Good morning. Doing good. How are you?
Doing well. Good. So, Wendy, we have a few events to tell everyone about to start things off.
Yes. First of all, I wanted to mention our Eastern Kansas Grazing School. That event is coming up May 5th and 6th. That's a Friday-Saturday event, and it's going to take place up in Bronson, which really is just not that far from here. We're going to cover lots of different things about fencing, forage considerations, like how to check your pasture, lots of good information. So that grazing school will be a great opportunity. Check out our Facebook feed for the flyer. It's also on our website. And then we've got our spring crop field day coming up May 23rd. So put that on your calendar. More information coming out on that.
Excellent. Very good. Well, we're going to start things off with Davin this morning and going to talk a little bit about pond weeds and aquatic plants. So what should we know about those?
Yeah, so those I've already started to get some questions on this year. Usually I don't start getting questions on them until a little bit later in May, beginning of June, but it's warmed up pretty fast this year. Water levels in ponds are lower, and we've had a lot of sunny days, so all of those are contributing factors. So the difference kind of between aquatic plants and pond weeds is just the fact that pond weeds refer to aquatic plants that have become overabundant and a nuisance, whether it's algae taking over the pond and covering up a majority of the pond, which of course is undesirable to look at and also for the health of the pond, or it's just algae and other aquatic plants being close to the bank and getting tangled in your fishing line, or if you're wanting to swim in the pond, of course that makes it kind of not that appealing to go swimming in. So they're really the same thing. They're just considered weeds when there's more of them than what you would like. Because, of course, you always want some aquatic plants in the pond. They provide an important environment for the fish that are in that pond. But so there's a couple different types of aquatic plants. So, of course, we have algae and other plankton. Of course, we always hear about blue-green algae blooms later on in the summer and local lakes being closed to those. And then there's the more common green algae that I see on a lot of ponds. And then the other classes are plants, are floating plants. These are plants that just, you know, float on the water surface. Submerged plants that are more rooted aquatic plants. And typically, they're completely under the water. And you'll really only start to see them close to the water's surface when it becomes a large population of them. And then those emergent plants, like lily pads that you see on top of the water's surface. So those are the main classifications of plants, and then there's a wide variety of aquatic plants. Every year I see at least one or two new ones, but of course lily pads, algae, cattails, American pondweed, water primrose, those are some common ones that I've seen in ponds last year and are starting to see this year. So if you have some pond weed problems and you're wanting to get rid of them or control them, the first step is to correctly identify the weed. And if folks aren't sure what they have on their pond, I'm happy to come out and take a look at it, or they can send me a picture of it to identify it. And then once we have it identified, we can look at different control options for it.
Well, that's and I had no idea that there's something called American pondweed, but yeah, you're right. That's just kind of funny. Now, obviously, there's a point where they started to be getting a nuisance, but what are some of the benefits that, you know, having, you touched on a few of them, but benefits of having those actual plants in a pond? I'm thinking probably shelter for fish and that sort of thing too.
Yeah, mainly shelter for fish. If you have, you know, some like turtles in there, food for them. You know, cattails are ones that I get calls on because they become a nuisance when they get too many of them along the bank of the pond, especially if it's where they like to get, you know, access to the pond. But cattails and other aquatic plants that are typically along the banks, they do help with filtering the water that runs off into the pond, which is an important job, because if your pond is downhill from fields or pastures or even roadways, when we do get rain, hopefully we'll start to get more rain.
Point,
yeah, at some point, and we get a lot of water runoff. If those fields and pastures have been fertilized recently, some of that fertilizer will be carried in the runoff, and that fertilizer going into the pond just changes the nutrient levels and the balance in the pond. And that is one reason why you'll algae can be on the pond, is that nutrient imbalance. So cattails, when there's not an overabundance of them, they do play an important role of acting as a filter system before that water gets into the pond. That's also another important reason to have grass or some sort of other vegetation growing on your pond banks.
Okay, gotcha. Well, and Wendy, this may be something that you might want to chime in on, but is there anything as far as maybe we should be concerned of when livestock have access to a pond, and maybe you have a lot of plants and that sort of thing, and is there any concern with that, or do they coexist pretty well? I just was curious if there was ever a point where you're like, there's certain plants that you want to keep out of that could affect the cattle or something.
There's no really toxic plants that we need to worry about as far as pond weeds for livestock. The biggest issues become when livestock have access to the pond and they are actually during warmer temperatures getting into the pond. And not only are they adding nutrients directly into the pond, they're also eroding the pond sides. And David, you might be able to describe that a little better. But when they walk through, they're degrading all of that. And so the pond life is affected.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and as they kind of walk in, Wendy already kind of mentioned it, but as they're kind of walking down, their hooves kind of break up that like slope, that pond bank more, so it can add to the sediment of the pond. The only time there's really a concern about livestock drinking out of the pond as far as aquatic weeds go is when you suspect there might be a blue-green algae bloom in your pond, and then you would want to pull livestock off of that pond until we can get that water tested and know for sure if it's releasing the harmful.
And that's a conversation we'll undoubtedly be having.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Well, anything else that people should know about this?
Just that there are, you know, some different options for treating pond weeds. Of course, there's physical removal, which usually people aren't that excited about that option. Yeah. Which I can understand. There's also aquatic herbicides you can use to kill off the pond weeds. It's important to use aquatic herbicides that are labeled for use in ponds. Always follow those label instructions. And when you're treating a pond with an aquatic herbicide, only treat about a third of the pond at a time, wait about a week to 10 days, and then treat the next third. And this is because the herbicide itself won't be harmful to the fish living in the pond, but when those aquatic weeds die off, that affects the oxygen level available to the fish, and then that reduced oxygen can be harmful and cause fish kills if it were in large amounts. So treating one section allows the fish time to adjust. And then if you have any of those kind of submerged class of pond weeds, or even the emergent class, anything that has sort of a root system in the pond, adding grass carp to your pond, it's a type of fish and they will eat some aquatic plants. They are kind of picky, you know, they'll pick and choose, so they're not a cure-all for every aquatic plant, but adding those to your pond can help keep it under control as well.
Excellent. Well, that's really good. And of course, you mentioned that you're happy to come out and look at different ponds and that sort of thing. So if people do have questions on any of this, what's the best way to get a hold of you, maybe get some pictures and that sort of thing to you?
Yeah, they can give me a call at the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690. Or they can email me. My email address is adaven@ksu.edu.
Very good. Well, coming up here in just a few, we're going to shift from pond weeds to land weeds. So Wendy's going to be back and talking about that here in a bit.
Thank you.
All right. So Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to have a continued chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension here on the Mighty 690. We are looking at a high today right around 60 degrees. And believe it or not, we have another chance of some rain. We'll see what happens. After 1 o'clock is when we're looking for that. So we got more on the way from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District here on KGGF here in just a few moments. Of course, news coming up at 8 o'clock right now in Coffeyville. We have 48 degrees. Back here on the Mighty 690 at 810, continuing our chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. We have Adaven Skronks and Wendy Powell with us. Good morning again, ladies.
Good morning.
So, Wendy, we're gonna talk a little bit about weeds on land. We've been talking about weeds in water and ponds and that sort of thing. So, you know, it seems kind of odd to ask, but I guess, and some people's definition may vary, but mm-hmm. What do you consider a weed?
I consider a weed anything that's not desirable. So some folks, let's talk about Bermuda grass, right? Mm-hmm. That's a common one, most folks know. But in pastures, it's pretty desirable most of the time. In a garden, it's probably not.
Exactly.
So it's anything that's just not where you want it to be. Or you could go with something like it's not a nutritious plant for whatever it is that you're grazing, you know, your livestock. So it can be complicated, that question, but let's just go with not desirable for this conversation.
I think that's a good definition because depending on what you're doing, yeah, that'll work. So Why should we worry about controlling weed populations in pastures?
Well, like I mentioned, one of the could-be definitions of a weed is they're less nutritious. So that's one factor. They also can impact the palatability of the rest of the pasture, you know. So if you've got, like, milkweed really close to the good grass that you want your livestock to eat, then cows might not be quite so appreciative of that blade of grass because it's next to something that's not so tasty. We can also, David mentioned earlier, we've got toxicity in ponds. We can also have toxicity issues with plants. So those are most undesirable. We definitely want to keep an eye out for those and control them. And then over time, there's a lot of weeds that like to try to take over pastures. So that reduces the space for our desired forage.
Gotcha. Now, what are some options for different control of weeds?
Yeah, so let's talk about our cultural practices first. And that's going to be anything that, like, management styles. So stocking rates, how many head per acre you're running, and that goes for any species. What time of year you're grazing a pasture. So if you've got this nice Bermuda field and you're grazing it in the summertime, but you're also grazing it in the winter when it's not growing, but maybe you fertilize it so you've got a nice stockpile. So your strategy when you're grazing time is going to make a huge impact on how that grass grows. The other thing I wanted to mention here with our cultural practices is what species we're running on our ground. If you've got lots of different types of forage in one pasture, maybe you need more than one type of livestock. So some co-species grazing could be one option there. Let's get into mechanical and kind of like mechanical removal of pond weeds from a pond. This one might not be quite so fun, but if you have some small children that need some labor, mm-hmm. then send them out there with maybe a hatchet, cut down some eastern red cedars. It's good for a few plants or small patches. So a lot of times thistle falls into this category. If you've got a low population of thistle that's just coming into your pasture, go ahead and just dig those up with a shovel and burn them. Don't need to spot spray. Just keep an eye out for them and remove them mechanically. And that saves you quite a lot of money on herbicide. The other big mechanical option, one of them, would be prescribed fire. So this is something that needs to be well timed and planned out, but it's a like what a doctor writes out for you for a medication for a health condition. It's a prescription. You know, you have a health condition in your pasture, weeds, and you can time a fire correctly to help control that. A couple of other mechanical options would be like brush hogging. So just whenever the weeds get tall and you're tired of looking at them, you just go and top them off with a brush hog, and it kind of shreds them up and puts that back down into the soil. Most of the time, though, those plants are still viable. So that's kind of an emergency option. And then also you'll see a lot of times with fence rows, just a clearing of a fence row. So somebody will bring in some heavy machinery and just push out trees or whatever brush might be there. So that's mechanical. And then we get into chemical practices, and that's going to be where we're looking at herbicide, and that's going to be the depth of our conversation today.
Very good. So how do we know if we have a problem and we need to address this?
Yeah. So I've always heard that the best thing to put in your pasture is your shadow, and that literally means just get out there and take a look at what is going on. You don't know unless you're out there. And when I say out there, I don't mean driving by at 20 miles an hour and looking. Because what you can see from the road is not the entire pasture. I was at a pasture earlier this week, and what was close to the road, it was a dirt road. All that fescue actually looked really good, which was really good news for this year. But as we got farther back into the pasture away from the road, you know, where the dust from the road doesn't always reach, that pasture land was a little bit more poor. So you have to actually get out there. You know, if you don't want to take a walk, you know, hop on the side-by-side, hop on a horse,
yep.
You know, just get out there and take a look around. Make sure you know what species of plants are present or what you're wanting to be present. So if you are looking for Bermuda grass, but you see something that might be Bermuda, might not be, then that's something where the extension office can help you with that plant identification and really IDing what is out there.
So what should we do if we've identified then a problem?
Well, just like with any other problem we have, we want to make a plan and then execute that plan. So identifying the plant, like I already mentioned, the correct identity is the key to control, just like with pondweeds that David mentioned earlier. We want to make for sure that we are selecting the correct herbicide for the plant. Decide on a management strategy. So if you don't want to do an herbicide, then pick one of those cultural practices or mechanical practices or a combination of any of these three categories to get that control handled. You want to know how big the problem is. And when I say this, it's twofold. The literal size of the plant. So like, let's consider ragweed. Western ragweed's really common weed around here. Right now, it's 2 to 4 inches tall. So it's really easy to control with some 2,4-D. And as it gets bigger, so later in May, 6 to 8 inches tall, whenever it's like a full-size plant, it's up to 12 inches or bigger, 2,4-D will not kill that. So our size of the problem has to be considered. And then also how much space does that plant cover? If it's just like a small area, maybe you can do some patch spraying, spot spraying, or maybe if it's a larger area, then it needs to be a full pasture spray.
And then what should we know about actually applying and using herbicide?
Yeah, there's lots of considerations with herbicide. And probably the biggest one is avoiding injury to our non-target plants. And so this is going to be drift or just choosing the correct herbicide for the problem plant. And so let's go back to drift. That is whenever herbicide comes out of the sprayer, the wind blows and can move that droplet away from where you intended it to be.
Kind of like overspray when you're doing spray paint or something like
that. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So if you've got tomato plants, but you're planted in the backyard and then you spray the pasture with some 2,4-D, you're going to have problems. It's just there. So you want to just be aware of what non-target species are around, what maybe your neighbors have. Choose weather conditions, spray on a day that is going to be safe. The other aspect of drift that is a little less common is volatilization. So this is when the actual liquid becomes a gas when it's released from the sprayer. And then that can really move downwind quite quickly, and it can go pretty far. So another consideration would be when you're spraying, wind temperature, or I'm sorry, wind speeds and direction, and then air temperature, because that volatilization, it's a difficult word to say, that occurs in warmer temperatures. So read labels, know what's going to be expected to be killed with that herbicide, and make sure you're checking weather conditions. The other things there, sprayer calibration, that's huge. So if you've got a sprayer that you ran it last year and you're just going to hop on it this year and use it again, you might want to go ahead and do some calibrations on that. Make sure you know what speed to run so your herbicide is coming out at the correct rate so that you're not over or under applying. Herbicide's expensive. We want to make for sure that we apply it correctly to get the most bang for our buck. Know what plants, I've already mentioned this several times, but it's so important, sensitive plants. Those tomatoes that maybe your neighbor just planted, they're going to be very upset if there's some drift that gets them. Environmental conditions, that's going to be our weather temperature again. And then last but not least, herbicide labels. I can't stress this enough. Read the label. That can tell you what species of plant the herbicide can kill and what stage. So, like I said, 2,4-D can kill a small western ragweed plant, but not a big one. So if you have big western ragweed, you need to move on to something more like Grazon or some of those summer herbicides. There are also going to be withdrawal times, just like with vaccines that we've talked about on previous occasions. Grazing and haying options after you put down herbicide. So sometimes that herbicide needs a few days to take effect in a pasture, and livestock should not be out there when it's happening. Maybe the plant turns toxic as it's dying, or maybe the herbicide itself maybe isn't safe for livestock. So just being aware of the grazing and haying withdrawal times is very important. There's so much information on a label, and you don't have to buy the chemical in order to find the label. There are a few different websites online where you can put the name of your chemical in, and it gives you the full current label. And if you want some help finding those, or if you've got questions about what herbicides to use, I'd be happy to have those conversations.
And that's easier to read than the tiny little print that's sometimes on those bottles.
Yes, absolutely. And you can use that option to find it in the document, you know, the control F, where you can, BlackBerry, does this handle it? Yes, we can find that.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask you is, we hear a lot about like noxious weeds and that sort of thing. What is the, I guess, definition of a noxious weed? Is that any different than, you know, any other weed?
Yeah, so that's an interesting concept. Here in Kansas, our noxious weeds are listed, and they are required to be controlled. So you can get herbicide a lot of times through our county weed department, sometimes at a discounted rate or a coupon or a voucher or something like that, and they'll help you control that weed in your pasture. So a noxious weed is simply a label that government puts on a weed that says we have to control it. There are still weeds out there that should be controlled that are not on the list. Johnson grass is one of them that comes to mind. It's not on the list, but whenever you have Johnson grass as a problem, it's a real problem. Cedar trees, they're not on the list, and they can be a major economic and productive impact.
Sure. Sure. Well, if people do have any questions on this and they want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do
that? Yeah, give me a call at the Altamont office. That number is 620-784-5337.
Excellent. And we want to run through those events that we have coming up one more time, just for the listeners who just tuned in.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got our Eastern Kansas Grazing School, where we'll be talking about some pasture management techniques, grazing, rotation, things like that. That's May 5th and 6th. It's a Friday-Saturday event, and that'll be held in Bronson. I'm really excited about that. And then May 23rd is our Spring Crop Field Day at Parsons.
Excellent. Well, Wendy, Davin, thank you so much for coming on, as always. I look forward to chatting again here real soon, and I hope you have a great rest of the weekend. Hope we get some more rain.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we'll be back with more here on Open Line as we continue on the mighty 690 KGGF. We're going to get started, actually, with Open Line here in just a few. 50 degrees right now in Coffeyville.